Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Territory Talk. I am one of your hosts, Chris Rex, alongside my best friend in life, my best friend in everything, my tag team partner, John Hun, the host of all hosts. And this again is Territory Talk, where we review Vice TV's Tales from the Territories. This is our third episode. And on this third episode, we're covering stories from the AWA, the American Wrestling Association. Pun, let him have it.
All right. So we had a round table full of people from our past. Well, I wouldn't say our past, maybe our parents' past. So yeah. You had people, I say two people from my past, but you had people like Ken Patera, the world's strongest man, a Mr. Olympian. You had the son of Vern Gagne, Greg Gagne. You had
Jim Brunzel.
You had Medusa, and you had DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. What a round table, you know. They all had their own specific times in AWA, their own moments, you know. So we're going to get into each of them. You know, I think the first person to speak about his time happened to be Diamond Dallas Page.
Yes.
But, you know, they did introduce the show, talked about how Vern Gagne opened it up as, you know, by himself, wanting to take over the whole territory from Minnesota, north into Canada, west to California, and east to Chicago. That's a huge territory we're talking about, folks.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much the expansion of what WWWF or WWF was turning into at the time. Yeah. So I just find it funny how, in the end, Vern and Greg Gagne were kind of mad that WWE took over when that was kind of your plan as well, you know?
You know, I think every one of those promoters.
That's their plan.
That was their plan, you know?
That's the reason why partnerships don't exist in wrestling.
You don't think Jerry Jarrett wanted to move north?
Everybody does.
Right? You don't think Vern Gagne wanted to move south and more east?
Yeah.
Eddie Graham.
Eddie Gilbert.
Wanted to spread out west. All of them wanted to do what Vince McMahon was able to do.
Yes, exactly. And we heard here from Diamond Dallas Page and his story in how he was in AWA, how he got into AWA. He was actually already trying to be a wrestler, and he figured, you know, I'm in my 30s now.
He didn't because he was in his 30s. He sent in a video to be a manager.
Yes, exactly. And
when he got in, Vern Gagne said, "You're the biggest manager I've ever seen."
Yeah, because he was wearing the cowboy boots that gave him a couple more inches. And at that time, you could start to see Diamond Dallas Page's King of the Gimmicks coming in on having every type of fucking everything, wearing every type of fucking, like, wrestling stigma character gimmick on him, you know, like, so to see how a talent like Diamond Dallas Page, who really didn't get his real push until the mid-90s, he started in the AWA.
Yeah, at 31 years old. Think about that. Started in the AWA. By the time he got to WCW, he was pushing 40. He was my age.
Yeah.
So that was insane. That was insane to come in to wanting to be a manager because you didn't think you would make it as a wrestler, and then Vern Gagne just gives you the shot because of how big you are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of...
And those promo skills.
Yes, he's always good on the shtick, and that's why he really kept his job. He was able to cut a promo. I've always said, if you can cut a promo, there's always going to be a job for you. You can cut a promo.
Because mouths put asses in seats.
Yes. Yes. One of the people he was managing happened to be on the round table, Medusa. And we hear her story on how she got into AWA. and how she got in was she was called to come into the AWA after working some indies, and the reason she was brought in was to start a program with Sherry Martel, one of the legends, one of the absolute greats, Sherry Martel, who was the AWA Women's Champion at the time. So to come in all and to specifically to work a program with Sherry Martel, I mean, that's amazing. And Sherry Martel happened to be, she was like one of the boys, and she liked to rib. And Pun, why don't you tell the story on the milkshake rib?
So apparently, Sherry was a huge fan of Dairy Queen.
No, I mean, it is a good
So,
spot on the road, bro. We've been there a few times on
yeah,
the
we have. So they were in two separate cars. I forgot who was with Sherry and who was with Medusa, but they were both in two separate cars, and they driving around
And
and.
Medusa's
In
getting that contact
the
high too, right?
middle of nowhere, and then in the middle of nowhere, they happen to see a Dairy Queen. So Sherry makes everybody stop, and they go into, Dairy Queen. She gets a bunch of blizzards and food, and goes back into the car. They continue down the road. Now, Sensational Sherry, or Sherry Martel back at that time, hops out the sunroof of the car with blizzards in each hand and starts launching in the car at the car in front of her, which has Medusa and oh man, I forgot everybody, but it was a tag team that was with her, right? And starts throwing it, and now they're going hitting the front windshield. Oh, so she's throwing them over the front to the front of the car in front of her to hit the front windshield. That's some good aim. Driving 60, 70 miles per hour down an empty highway. So now they're flaying their window wipers. So they start throwing stuff back at
And
Sherry's car.
the thing is, putting the windshield wipers on is only spreading the milkshake around, so they really can't see shit at all.
Now while Sherry's out the sunroof and they're all launching blizzards at each other, the driver decides to stand up while steering the vehicle, pull down his pants, and stick it out the window, mooning the other car.
And
He gets his ass stuck in the window
they wound up in a fucking ditch.
and drove into a ditch. Medusa and her car drive off, go to the arena. Sherry and her car end up being late
Late
to
for
the matches.
the matches.
And that's hilarious. That's a rib I would have liked to have been a
I
part of.
mean, that's that old school, like, even without the visuals that they show on the episode, like, you could just close your eyes, hear that story, and just picture you like, oh man, that's a good old fucking rib. That's a fucking good fucking rib, man. Sounds like something we would have done, definitely.
For sure, for sure.
If people were able to ride with us for longer than 2 days.
Well, we were the only car. So, people had no choice either to ride with us or to take public transportation to the shows. And after one or two rides with us, they were taking public transportation to the
Well, we've definitely had the complaints of the smoking in the car. I don't know what, yeah, there we go. You know what? Yeah, because it's unprofessional, pun.
I cannot take rides without smoking, but
I mean,
that's
think
just
about
me.
it. If you're taking a fucking 10-hour trip to Ohio,
Which I'm doing tomorrow.
th
But yes.
if you're taking a 10-hour trip to the Ohio, what we don't do pills. We don't do stuff like that. I
You
mean,
smoke? I don't even drink.
you know what I mean? We're
So,
not
I mean,
drinkers. Everyone should know I'm not really a fucking drinker. It doesn't take much to get me fucking drunk.
food and
So
marijuana is what we need.
food and weed, and while you drive, I take the naps, and come up with some
Yep, and I would have
matzos
definitely been throwing those blizzards at
and
you.
yeah, you know what? That would I could see us fucking doing that, and I you know, it makes me want to get back on the fucking road again, bro. It really
Right,
does. It
right.
makes me want to get
Like I
back on
said,
the road again.
I definitely want to be back in the business again in some capacity.
Now we also hear a story about one of the most famous wrestlers to ever grace a ring, getting his start at AWA. Not only getting his start at AWA, but training at AWA, which the training at AWA was gruesome. And that man is, woo, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Oh man, he got his start in the AWA under the most gruesome training. Okay, I mean, there was fucking chickens and pigeons shitting in the ring. It was cold as fuck. There was like no heat. It was in a barn. They'd go for like mile runs every fucking morning and work out and then go hit the ring and blow themselves up. And people were vomiting. And a lot of people didn't last past the day. And Ric Flair stopped showing up after about a
We
week.
quit.
He quit. Vern Gagne drove to Ric's house and to ask him why he's not at training, why he's not at camp. And Rick said, "I'm done. I can't take this. I don't think I can do this. I don't think I physically can do this. I'm done." Vern Gagne smacks the shit out of Ric Flair. I mean, almost knocks him dead cold. He knocked him on his ass with the smack and said, "Get in the car. You're going to the fucking camp." I mean, talk about one seeing talent in somebody. That's seeing fucking talent in somebody. He knew what Ric Flair could be, and Ric Flair was giving up on himself. That's a fucking
Our
great
training,
coach. That's a
you
good,
know.
great trainer.
Think about it. Before he even had a match, he knew what Ric Flair could be,
Yeah.
and didn't let. What if he would have let Ric Flair quit? Think about
The
what Ric
landscape of
Flair had
wrestling, bro.
done.
The landscape of wrestling probably would have been so
So
different.
different
Yeah.
if Vern didn't let him quit.
And
I mean, if
two,
Vern let him quit.
it shows you how tough pro wrestling training is. Because I've seen it myself where people don't last more than a day. They come up for a few hours, they go home, and you never see them again. And they
I've seen
paid
it
for
too.
and they paid up front for a month of training.
One weekend and they're done.
One week, one fucking day, bro. Like I said, I've seen guys like come in at fucking 11, 12, 11 a.m., 12 p.m. Off, oh, you know, I used to be a boxer. I was just, okay, cool. This is gonna be something different, though. You know, get in the ring. You got them doing, you know, the basics, learning the basics, and then they got the basics down, or you know, they need some work on their rolls. You know, you got them running ropes to that and taking bumps, and that's when they start.
That's when they start
Yeah.
blowing up in 10 minutes, and they're like, "No, I can't do this over and
After
over and
about
over."
4 hours of training. Now they're like, oh man, you never see him again. Or there's people
Yeah.
you think are like, yo, they're gonna come back. They're gonna come back. Oh. And you
Nope.
never and you wonder why they don't come back. They just never come back.
But Ric Flair came back, and we have a long legacy of his career
Yes.
that. We got to thank Vern Gagne for.
And not only did Ric Flair get his start. Ooh, brother. Hulk Hogan, brother, got his start in the AWA.
Yep.
And Greg Gagne tells a story of pretty much when the WWF started taking over and taking control of the territories. And the first man that to go to WWF was Hulk Hogan. Well, who the man who would become Hulk Hogan. And he was a big draw for AWA. He was becoming a big national draw for AWA. And they had gotten a letter one day that said, I'm done. Terry. And, you know, as Hulk Hogan's shoot name. And they're like wondering what's going on. And they thought it was a rib from Eddie Graham because it was sent from Tampa, Florida. So they thought they just threw it away and thought it was a rib. Well, the day of that show, he doesn't show up. Greg Gagne calls Hulk Hogan and asks why he's not showing up, what's going on? And he said, oh, well, I signed a deal with Vince McMahon. I'm done. You know, I'm leaving. He goes, well, you know, you still do the right thing in the business. You come, you do the job, you know, you know, then you leave. You honor your obligations. He said, Vince McMahon is paying me more to stay home. And that right there is when they knew what was happening.
Yeah,
And
and Hulk Hogan was the first person at that time to no-show a booking.
Yeah, I mean, he no show, and that's a big thing too. Like, to see what Hulk Hogan became with WWF, and the fact that like he left kind of at the right time, because either he was going to become a big star in the AWA, or he was going to become a bigger star in the WWF.
And him leaving was the beginning of AWA
It was the beginning of the end.
explode.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beginning of the end.
So, Pum, why don't you tell us some more stories from this episode?
Right, Chris, so here we go. How about Mad Dog Vachon?
Oof.
Everybody knows who he is. He had a great career in the territory days. Now, we all heard the story of the plane ride from hell. Everybody made that story famous. But this story with Mad Dog Vachon ending up on an airplane and what he does is, phenomenal. So, their day starts at the show. Before his match, he drinks a pint of whiskey. He goes out, has his match, and in 2 minutes, he's back in the locker room. I killed that kid. All right. Everybody was shocked. He sits down, he drinks a whole case of beers that are on ice. And he takes two pills that were like speed. He was told to only take one, but he takes two.
Yeah, he
All
had to
right.
go. He had to go see his fiance, so he had to be on early, right?
He asked to be on early so he could go see his fiance and her family. So he's on early. He does that. He leaves after drinking all that beer after his match. He had to be on early, had to leave, but he had enough time to drink all that beer.
Right? Yeah. It
He didn't even think
sounds like
about that
somebody we
logic.
know. It's
So now he goes out to, a barbecue place, eating ribs, got barbecue sauce all over himself,
drinking
drink
mad wine.
bottle after bottle of wine, and ends up meeting back up with the boys. Now he gets back with the boys, but not before he bought another pint of whiskey. So now they're getting ready to load up this 12
12 passengers.
passenger airplane that can only hold eight wrestlers
Plus
and
their
their luggage. All right.
luggage.
And they called it the Flying Coffin. They also called it Suicide One. They hated going on it. But after this ride with Mad Dog Vachon, they hated it even more. So now, he's high,
He's
he's
drunk.
drunk. So on the plane, he gets given a quaalude by Adrian Adonis. And he pulls out that new pint of whiskey that he just got before getting on the plane. He drinks the pint of whiskey, he takes that quaalude, and he is gone. He doesn't know if he's going up, he doesn't know if he's going down. Everybody's doing their thing sitting on the plane, and then all of a sudden, they feel gusts of wind. They look out and they see Mad Dog Vachon hanging out the door of the airplane like he's flying. Everybody's scared shitless. He's having a good old time. Starts drawing out his gear bag, his stuff from his gear bag one by one. There goes the jock strap. There goes the tights. There goes the shoes.
I
Everybody
mean,
goes
that's crazy. He's
crazy.
dumping his own gear, like.
He's just tossing shit out. The pilot's telling everybody to get him inside. He finally comes inside, but leaves the door open.
And they
And they're
couldn't get the
all
door. They couldn't get the door shut.
they're all scared shitless. The pilot tells them we're gonna make an emergency landing. Get in the crash position. I've never even heard of that before until I heard it on Vice. Get in the crash position. They all duck down with the head between their legs and they brace for impact. Luckily, they all land safely. They had a really good pilot that landed that plane on one wheel and then got it straight down. Thank God Mad Dog Vachon didn't kill a plane of superstars at that moment.
Right. So now they get off the plane, and Mad Dog Vachon, he's got foam all over him, and he wipes it off. The cops are coming at him, and they're trying to get his hands behind his back to handcuff him, and they can't. They can't. This man's going wild. So they go to Greg Gagne, and they say, "Listen, there's two options here. he can either go to jail. You can spend time in jail, or you could guys could take him back.
And get
And
him the hell out of here.
he goes, he looked, Mad Dog looks at everybody, goes, "You guys better take me back or I'll fucking kill you all." So they take him back. And they get they strap the whole time back, they have him strapped to twice around, holding him down, and he's like, "I'm going to fucking kill you. I'm going to kill you guys." Oh
then when
man.
they landed,
They
they
left him
all
on the
booked
plane
the
with the
plane. They
pilot.
left him on the plane strapped. That's
Oh
funny.
man. Oh, that was a great fucking story. That it just shows how crazy Mad Dog was and how crazy things again were during the territory days. It was really like the Wild West. It was the outlaws.
It sure was. Every territory had a loony
Yeah.
or two, or two,
Or
or
two
three.
or three or a few.
Think about that, man. Ooh.
Well,
Ooh.
speaking of fucking Looney, we have another plane story that involves Mad Dog Vachon. I just don't think Mad Dog Vachon should just be on planes at all. Not with Adrian Adonis. Them two, it creates chaos because here they are on another flight, okay, and Adrian Adonis has to take a shit, and there's no bathroom there. The bathroom's not on the plane. And Bobby Heenan says, "I got an idea." Grabs a garbage bag, regular black garbage bag, and continues to put it under Adrian Adonis's ass as he takes a shit into the bag. Well, they're on the plane. They're really high up in the fucking air, gravity. The bag explodes.
Oh, God. Oh my God.
And shit is like the shit hits the fan.
Bobby Heenan is covered in shit. And then the whole plane is covered in shit. Everyone on the plane is gagging. I'm gagging. Oh man, I get this.
And then so
They
everyone's
had
like, all
about
right, it's
45 minutes left on that plane
yeah,
ride.
there was 45 minutes left on the plane that they were covered in shit. Human fecal matter all over the place. All right, pink eye all over.
You speaking of pink eye, Mad Dog will get it.
So they land the plane, and everyone agrees that it's going to be Adrian Adonis and Bobby Heenan's job to clean the plane, and rightfully so.
You better believe it. I'm the first
I can
one to get
imagine you
out
being on
that door.
the
We fighting to get out that door first.
plane, bro. So, well, they get back, they go to check out the plane, and well, it still smells like shit on the plane. So they do some inspecting and find out that there's a bag of the bag's still there. They left the
Mad
bag of
Dog
shit
Vachon
there.
finds the garbage bag.
So Mad Dog Vachon sticks his head in the garbage bag for about 30 seconds. Oh my God, I'm in awe of this. For 30 seconds. And it takes his head out that bag and goes, "That's how you get used to it."
With
Yo.
shit all in his
He
beard.
got
Oh
shit on his beard, hanging off his beard.
God.
Bro, this Mad Dog Vachon is a fucking loony, bro.
I would have puked. There would have been shit and puke all
How
over
do
that
you
aircraft.
stick your head in a bag of human shit or any type of shit for that matter for 30 seconds
Bro,
and then say
I
that's
would
how
have
you get
puked.
used to it?
I would have puked. Probably all over him. Oh, yes, give me more.
Motherfucker has shit dangling from his beard. He's got dingleberries on his beard. How you got dingleberries on your fucking beard, bro? It's
Oh, man, let's move on.
Yeah,
Please talk about
that was
Quentin
a shitty
Tarantino.
topic, huh?
Please talk. Please talk about Ken Patera. You're making
Okay,
me fucking
so
want to puke.
we're gonna go to Ken Patera, who is, like we introduced, a strong man, a former Mr. Olympia, If you ask him, he's still all of those things.
He said he's still the world's strongest man. Yes, he did.
And one night after a match, he's with Saito, Master Saito. And
okay, yes,
they're at a bar. Well, they actually got to it. They got to a town where there was like no hotels, nothing. And he said, classic Greg Vernia-Gagne move. Or maybe you were booking at that. And he seemed pretty heated, like still about it. Like,
they were at a Holiday Inn, and lucky the bar was open.
So luckily there was a Holiday Inn and the bar was open. So they're having a few drinks, scotch and water. I don't know why the water, but scotch and water. And they hadn't eaten all day. So Ken Patera asked how Master Saito's leg was doing because he had taken the spot where he got hit in the leg with a chair. And he said, no good. So Ken Patera said, all right, I'll walk down and get us some food. There's a McDonald's down about two blocks away. So he's walking to this McDonald's down the hill. He gets down the hill, goes to the Golden Arches, big, beautiful Golden Arches, knocks on the drive-thru window. And the guy goes, are you Ken Patera? And he goes, yeah. He opens the window and goes, I would like, you know, a few quarter pounders, maybe like five of them. And he goes, and the guy working at McDonald's goes, oh, we've been closed for about 2 hours already. You know, we're filming a commercial. Don't you see all the cameras? So he says, yeah, I see all the cameras. He goes, so that's what all the stacks of those burgers are there all about. He goes, yeah. You can't just give me like five of them, six of them. And he goes, no, we were not allowed to do it. We're there for a commercial. All of a sudden, some guys walking behind Ken Patera and goes, these guys are fucking assholes. And he goes, I know. And next thing you know, a boulder just comes flying through the window. A 30-pound boulder comes flying through the window of McDonald's. And Ken Patera says that it was the guy that was, you know, they'd gotten fired and everything.
He says he asked the guy, why you do that?
He said they fired me. Well, it seems he goes back to the hotel and says, hey, Saito, I couldn't get any food, you know, goes to call his wife. All of a sudden there's a knock on the door and it's police. Well, Master Saito answers the door and he's in his underwear. So here's this big Japanese wrestler in his underwear answering the door, not understanding anything that the cops are asking right now. Why don't you take it from there, pun?
So Ken Patera, you know, decides to, you know, come over, see what's going on. And they ask him, are you Ken Patera? Obviously, yeah, you know. And they said, did you just throw a boulder through the McDonald's window? And he goes, no. And as soon as he says no, the cop takes out a can of mace and sprays him.
And then they spray Saito.
So now they're both mace, and they realize what's going on. And Saito
has a single leg takedown,
picks up the officer and just snaps his leg. But by the time they were even macing the eyes, they didn't know Bassett was already caught. So by the time he broke his leg, there were 16 more cops in the hallway. The cops go to get them, and both of them just start fighting cops.
It's a madhouse.
A madhouse of cops getting flung around by two wrestlers, about 16 of them, he said. Maybe the story is exaggerated,
yeah,
but 16 is too much of an exact number to be exaggerated. So, you know, they had them all piled up, and I think the cop with the broken leg takes a shot at them.
Yeah, with his revolver. They wound up doing some time in. They wound up doing some getting arrested and doing some time in prison. I think it was what, 2 years in prison and 6 years probation or something like that.
Yeah, and you know that's crazy. You know, he didn't even do it. He didn't even get to tell the story to the cops.
No.
About the kid that got fired that
No.
threw it. But
So he tells this story, and everyone's starting to be like, and Jim Brunzell goes, "Listen, I love you. You're a good friend of mine, but I have to tell you, I do not believe that you didn't throw that boulder through the window." And he's like, "Everybody's always accusing me." And I love how hot he gets in this episode, bro. Because,
yo,
like,
he got upset because everybody at the table seemed to have that consensus then. You
yeah.
know, we all think, you know,
Yeah,
you ended up
and he's
throwing
sitting
that
there
rock.
trying to. But I think, I mean, come on, a 30-pound boulder just launching it through a window.
I mean, at 19, 20 years old, can you? I had superhuman strength when I was, you know, that age. I was lifting shit that I shouldn't have been lifting. So I can't see that. You know, I can't see that. I Latin lover. If I was able to suplex Latin lover back at that age, I could pick up a 30-pound boulder and throw it through a McDonald's window.
Okay.
All right. I mean, like, so when I think about it, it could have been either way, but they all know Ken Patera. We don't. So for all of them at that table to sit and say, we think you did it,
Yeah, I like how Medusa's like knowing your personality. Like,
right?
I think
You know,
you did.
I'm thinking that, yeah, maybe there was a kid there that got fired, maybe, but Ken had to throw that boulder. Ken
And
had to
then
throw that
for them
boulder.
to do prison time, I'm pretty sure like evidence was
Once Saito broke that leg, they were doing prison time.
Poor Saito,
It.
man. Poor Saito.
That was
Poor
it.
Saito.
In his underwear, had no idea what's going on. Gets maced, breaks a cop's leg, beats up 16 others. That's 2 years' time.
Damn.
What a night, bro, for him.
Damn, bro. Yeah, so that, I mean, this was a fun episode. Like I said, it started out slow, but it picked up when we got these stories. And it was a lot of lighthearted stories, craziness, during the territory days. And that's what this is all about. Here, sitting here discussing what it was like in back in those days. And as a wrestler and as a former wrestler, I mean, this is stuff we like, legends to us, myths to us, like things we've always heard about, and like a lot of it's starting to come to light nowadays, you know, with social media and podcasts, and you're starting to hear more of these stories coming to light. And it's like, yeah, like that was fun in wrestling, man.
And
Like, yes,
also,
sometimes things got taken to another level, but things were fun.
and now that kayfabe isn't what it was back then, these stories can come out now. Since all these wrestlers are living the gimmick inside and outside the ring, they can tell more of the, you know, behind the scenes stories. So I'm liking the stories coming out.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and I can't wait to see what's next on Tales from the Territories. We have CWF Bloodstains in the Everglades. Championship Wrestling from Florida was known for a training regime that both elevated its wrestlers and literally broke newcomers like future WWE stars Hulk Hogan. And this is where stars like, you know, Hulk Hogan and Dusty Rhodes kind of got their start.
Yeah, so this is gonna be, we're gonna hear about Hulk Hogan before he got to AWA.
Yeah, and we're gonna hear about the training of Hulk Hogan.
It's gonna be an interesting show.
Yeah, it is.
Interesting
And you can catch all of the Four Corners Network shows. That's the Four Corners Podcast, or Four Corners Rewind, and Territory Talk, this show, on all listening platforms and all social media platforms above Pun's Head, at Four Corners Net. That's at number four, Corners Net, on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can find us on YouTube as well. Thank each and every one of you for tuning in to Territory Talk with myself and John Pun. As always, be excellent to each other and keep supporting pro wrestling.